Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for October 29th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here to talk with you about the big shows in pro wrestling. Tonight, we're going to recap Halloween Havoc Night 1, the NXT special event that was held last Tuesday night. We'll take a look at Night 2, which will be held this Tuesday night on Halloween. We'll also preview the Crown Jewel card that takes place next Saturday afternoon here in the United States, 1 p.m. Eastern start time for that show emanating from Saudi Arabia. We'll be on the air right after that show goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails in reaction to Crown Jewel. So Brandon LeClaire and I will be guiding you through that show next Saturday. Early evening, we'll call it, maybe late afternoon, hopefully, knock on wood, that it doesn't go too deep into the late afternoon hours. Again, that's right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. And, of course, if you're listening live, you can contact us via phone, 515-605-9345, or via email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So to talk about all this and likely more, I welcome in my co-host for this evening. He is PWTorch.com contributor Kelly Wells. Kelly, thanks for joining me once again here on Wrestling Night in America.
Always good to be here. One of my favorite shows too. Yeah, I'm excited about Halloween Havoc, except for the fact that it is on Halloween, which is my favorite holiday. And I will be covering it. A bummer there, but you can't win them all. I've been winning quite a few years in a row, and heading out there with my kids, who are kind of on the verge anyway. So, yeah, looking forward to talking about it. However,
absolutely, and yeah, that's the kind of the positive and the negative. The positive is that it's a Halloween-themed show, and you can't get any more apropos than having it on Halloween. I think it would add something to the Halloween Havoc theme of the show. But the downside is your target demographic is probably not going to be at home at that hour, or at least maybe for the first half hour, for the first hour, depending on your neighborhood and what the trick-or-treating rules are in said neighborhood. So it's going to be interesting to see what the rating looks like, especially in the key demographic there come Tuesday night. So let's rewind a little bit to this past Tuesday, night one of Halloween Havoc. Just to go through the results, Roxanne Perez defeated Kiana James in a Devil's Playground match. Lexus King debuted and defeated Dante Chen. Kalani Jordan defeated Ariana Grace in a breakout tournament semifinal match. Chase Yu defeated The Family to win the NXT tag titles. Blair Davenport over Gigi Dolan in a lights out match. Lola Vice defeated Carmen Petrovic in another breakout tournament semifinals match. And Lyra Valkyria upset Becky Lynch to win the NXT Women's Championship. So a couple of these matches, I don't think we have to talk about every single one of them, but a couple of these matches I want to get your thoughts on before we go to the phones. And the first is Lexus King's debut. We've seen Brian Pillman Jr. in AEW. We saw the vignettes leading up to his debut in NXT. Match was a little over 4 minutes, I think, against Dante Chen. What was your impression of whatever this character is supposed to be?
You know, so far, I'm bullish. And like, I know he's not some great talent who's just holding all of it back right now. I know that he's still very much a work in progress, but I liked the vignettes leading to this, him desperately trying to break away, break out of the shadow, and be his own man. And even the lines about how he didn't know his father. He lost him when he was four. So I liked all that part of it. Dante Chen is a great, great bump machine. I wish that I thought his ship was going to come in, but I think they just like having him be a low-level guy to make those incoming heels look good. No particular negatives about this. Follow-up's going to be key. I have no idea what to expect as far as how high up the card he will move. I've got half a mind to think that they're just going to try him out near the top of the card and see if that sticks, and if it doesn't, they'll backslide him into whatever position they see fit. But so far, I think so good. And he's not like some talent I was all excited about for WWE coming out of AEW. Like he's not Jade Cargill in terms of upside, I don't think. But he was one of many people who was just bit by the problem of being on too big a roster with too little time to go around. So I don't know. It'll be fun to see what happens here.
I think it was smart to address his family lineage in the business. I think it's absolutely ridiculous when you have someone like Bron Breakker out there, and not only do they change his name, but they don't acknowledge, or at least did not for the longest time, acknowledge his, the Steiner brothers, Rick being his dad, Scott being his uncle. They would make veiled references on commentary, which made it all the more strange that they didn't just go all the way and acknowledge it. They finally, of course, did. But I think acknowledging it right off the bat is smart, and I think it gets him automatic heel heat right away for basically disavowing father, because what do wrestling fans love more than second-generation superstars, right? I mean, that's just they love that history. They love the nostalgia of it. And for Brian Pillman Jr. to say, no, I'm not going to even go by that name. This is not someone who raised me. This is not someone who I even knew all that well, is automatic heat right away. I think the phrase that I would use in terms of his debut is cautiously optimistic. I think there was a lot going on with the character and the entrance, and I'm not sure it all connected very well. Not only connected to the audience, but connected within the fabric of the character. You know, I don't think it was – I'm not sure it was all put together super well, but I think he's going to have a chance. And so we'll see what comes of it. I think you're right about Dante Chen, who's a good first opponent for Lexus King / Brian Pillman Jr. So I would anticipate, we always say it seems like on the horizon is going to be some call-ups. And certainly if there are call-ups, Carmelo Hayes, Bron Breakker, anyone like that, it kind of cleans out the main events a little bit and allows some others to move up. And then allows someone like Lexus King to move into that mid-card or upper mid-card role, more of a starring role on television. So maybe that's what we'll get here over the next few months. But yeah, I thought it was a largely positive debut. I wasn't, blown away or anything like that. I was not, quite frankly, blown away by the times that I saw him in AEW. So that's why I say cautiously optimistic, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like we agree pretty much across the board. Not much to add other than people are saying Lexus King sounds like a porn name, and I cannot disagree. It kind of
wouldn't
does.
Be the first in NXT, let's be honest.
No. They love their accidental porn names. I also think a major reason they have to, even if this was the pre-internet kayfabe era, if he had shown up looking like he looks, we all would have said, oh, well, that's obviously Brian Pillman's kid. It's all over his face, his hair, everything. It's right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, another reason that it was smart to address that. So the next match I want to talk about was the NXT tag titles changing hands, Chase U defeating the family to win the tag titles. And more pointedly, I thought this whole situation with JC Jane and Thea Hale has been really interesting because, Thea gets down on herself for losing. She's kind of rebelling, I guess, against Chase U, and then she finds a kindred spirit in JC Jane. JC at first seems like she's taking advantage of Thea, still trying to find her way, and then it turns out maybe JC is exactly what Thea needs, and then just when you think that JC is trying to pull Thea Hale away from Chase U, here they are celebrating with Chase U all together at the end of the match. So where we've gotten to, and there could be chapters yet to play out in this, but certainly where we've gotten to this point with the JC Jane Thea Hale relationship with Andre Chase and Chase U is not where I expected it to be going.
Two title changes on this show, and this is the one I did not predict. I thought that the reason that Chase U won this would be just for another easy tune-up. I don't want to say easy, but But Dee and Stax only had one successful title defense. That's it. They had a very quiet reign. They were champs for a few months, but they only had two defenses, including the one that they actually ended up losing. And I thought Chase, you were good cannon fodder, and like you, I thought that that was the chance for them to do what they're really doing with JC Jane and Thea Hale. And I too have been kind of drawn in by this. JC's tough for me because she's not great in the ring, and I keep thinking when she's off for a few weeks or a couple of months, and they bring her back, okay, this is where it comes together, and it kind of hasn't. But I like so much what she's been able to accomplish as like this snotty little sniveling heel. And that part is good. And Thea, of course, for her part and the role she had, I miss it so much. It hurts. And I guess that's the idea. They want us to miss that. I still think that what they're doing here with this story is suckering in and making it just long enough for us to trust that everything's okay so they can twist the knife. I think that's what they're doing, but I love that they're dragging it out because I genuinely don't know how they're going to end this.
Yeah, and, you know, JC, like you said, she's not great in the ring, but I guess for this storyline, she doesn't really have to be. Now, night two, you know, she and Thea Hale are going to team up to face Chelsea and Piper Niven for the women's title, so we'll get a good sense on Tuesday to see where they're at as far as the combination of the character, the storyline, and JC Jane in the ring. That's going to be a good litmus test for her against two main roster members as well. But yeah, I've been more intrigued by this storyline than I ever thought I would be, because it just kind of felt like that paint by numbers. And then maybe, like you said, maybe there's another shoe to drop yet. But it is, you know, I've said before on this show, I'm a huge fan of Thea Hale. I preferred the tag team of Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. I thought Gigi Dolin had the higher ceiling, I guess. And now you have Gigi Dolin, who's in this feud with Blair Davenport. She loses in the lights out match here at night one of Halloween Havoc. I've been more impressed what JC Jane's doing lately than Gigi Dolin.
Yeah, and Gigi continues to be the better one in the ring. She works a little slow sometimes, but it seems like that's been getting just ever so much better. But yeah, I can't disagree with that. I thought that Gigi was a shoe-in to end up being the bigger star, but all the things that make you a wrestling star seem to be shining more on JC right now. And if she could just put together that work in the ring, she'd be everything as a one-woman toxic attraction that they ever could have asked for.
Yeah, and JC's got the hotter storyline right now, and that's to a certain extent her credit, but that's just the way it is right now, and you can see that the NXT writers are having fun coming up with ideas for JC and Thea, so she's kind of the hot hand right now, and that doesn't mean 6 months, a year from now, Gigi Dolin isn't going to overtake her with a storyline of her own or anything like that. It's just in this moment, JC is certainly hotter in terms of character than Gigi Dolin is. Sticking with the women, the women's breakout tournament finals will be on night two, and it will feature Kalani Jordan against Lola Vice. I just want to get your thoughts kind of overarching on this tournament, what you've thought of the tournament. I think if you were laying it out and you'd been paying attention to NXT, Jordan versus Vice probably would have been the finals that you came up with. Maybe Ariana Grace fits in there because she had some time and gotten some vignettes previously in NXT. But, you know, Kalani Jordan had been working with Dana Brooke before Brooke was let go. Lola Vice has been featured here and there on NXT. So not only are they two who had been featured previously, but they're probably two of the most athletic. I don't know if they're the best in the ring right now of anyone in the tournament, but I think they have the most athletic upside of anyone in the tournament. So not surprised that they're going to be facing off in the finals. I do think it's the right decision, but what have been your thoughts on the breakout tournament? And did you see Jordan versus Vice in the finals coming? And do you think that's the right finals for Tuesday night?
As far as athletic upside, I would add Jada Parker to that conversation. I was very, very impressed with her first match. But there's nobody else I would shoehorn in there as of just yet. This is one of those where it's the correct final, but it's boring because, like, literally all of us, like all three of us on the show on PWT Talks NXT talked about this as we really just talked about it as inevitable, and we hope that it's interesting on the way. And it was, because we had some things to look forward to in the ring, some things that really need work, and, you know, that can be interesting to see, even if fun's not the right word. And I really liked that they did the inset promos, except for Ariana Grace, who's already so good on the mic that they trusted her to do an in-ring promo before her match, and I think that's very telling. And Ariana, like Santino, doesn't have to rack up wins in order to stay relevant, because she's that good at that part of it. That apple did not fall far from the tree. She just did great out there. We had picked Jordan to win this tournament. I know Bruce and I did anyway at the beginning of the tournament, and reserved the right to change that if anything different happened with the women's title picture. And I actually will kind of bail on my original thoughts and say Vice, and that is because of what happened with the women's championship. Against Becky, I think either of them would work. But against Valkyria, who herself is still working into being like a beloved babyface and everything, and things are going in the right direction, but I don't think you give her the championship and then throw a really likable underdog at her. So I think Kehlani will be fine, even if she loses this tournament. And I think the right way is to maybe have Electra Lopez cost her that match, and then she's got a built-in storyline, even though she doesn't win, and Lola Vice herself has that championship match coming up.
Before we get to the main event, I don't want to leave just one match off here, since we've talked about them all almost by now, but it was the opener Roxanne Perez against Kiana James, Devil's Playground match. They had some fun with the teasing of the tax and things like that. Roxanne Perez, where do you see her fitting in right now? You know, she was the underdog babyface that you're talking about at one time. She was all around the title picture. Now it seems like she's been pushed aside. I think there is an argument to be made for rotating people into the title picture. So this could be just a situation where, you know, Roxanne doesn't have a title storyline, but they want to keep her on TV doing something rather than just take her off. But what do you assess Roxanne Perez's situation right now within the NXT Women's Division?
I don't think that Roxy is somebody you can turn heel, so you got limited options of what to do with her. I don't see it yet anyway, but I once said that about Dakota Kai, and I love her heel work. Perez, I love her all around. She's got this really inherent likable quality inside the ring. But then, you know, especially early on, she would grab that mic and it would just be death. Very flat and very, I would say, unsure of herself, to the point where they did that storyline of her being racked with self-doubt and everything like that, which then resulted in her losing that match anyway, so I don't know why they did it. But it's been, her booking has been something of a curiosity, where they had their story about her getting to the championship, and then she lost it very quickly. Then she got herself back into that match to win it back, and then she didn't win it there either. Very strange for what she's done, but it is NXT. It's not super important who those champions are, and they want to take somebody like Tiffany Stratton. And, well, it's important, but for different reasons. They want to see how Tiffany Stratton handles being a champion. They want to see her championship swagger, because we are definitely going to see Tiffany Stratton be a champion on the main roster at some point. That is somebody that I think that internally is viewed extremely highly, and with good cause. She picked it up. She just soaked it up like a sponge. So I agree with the choice to rotate things in and out. And as much as she really is a savant in the ring, she's not a savant on the mic. So if she has to stay in NXT a little bit longer, that's fine. I like her casting. I like the role she's in, but she's got work to do.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the women's division and a shakeup within the women's division, Lyra Valkyria defeating Becky Lynch to win the NXT women's title. I think if you drew up how you wanted a big star to come to NXT and perform, I think it would have been Becky Lynch's run to a T. She came in, she put people over, even in defeating them, made them look good, and really put Lyra Valkyria on the map here. Valkyria was someone who, you know, obviously NXT management had a lot of confidence in. And I think she just needed that. She never had that moment, really, to get over the hump and to be the star that I think NXT writers and Shawn Michaels and whoever saw her to be. And Becky Lynch was able to provide that on Tuesday night. They had one heck of a main event match. Becky put her over clean, and Valkyria now has a win over someone who main evented WrestleMania. And, you know, a lot of folks come to NXT and they, you know, have some fun and they get to interact with some younger talent and things like that. And they don't, it doesn't really amount to much. And this felt different. Becky Lynch going down there and seemed to be working especially hard to put people over and to kind of give back to the women on the NXT roster. Is that kind of how you saw this playing out with Becky Lynch and then ultimately with Lyra Valkyria Tuesday night?
It is. And I would say NXT is on a bit of a hot streak there because I thought that the Judgment Day really did wonders for a lot of people that they shared the ring with during the time when all of them were doing it. I thought that Rhea doing as many backstage segments as she did, the women just looked all the more important and all the more relevant just for sharing the screen with Rhea and being part of those scenes. She had a good scene with Lyra Valkyria that probably gave her a real boost before this string of matches that culminated in this championship. This is one that I did predict correctly, and it's because it was very easy for me to see Becky Lynch wanting to do this run and wanting one of the end games to be, I want to gas up my fellow Irish lass. I mean, she is on NXT 8 years back. We're in the Finn Balor era, and they go to video packages of people talking about him and kind of, you know, breaking kayfabe a little bit on the show. And Becky's just, she's one of the people who's just constantly building up Finn, although she always says Fergal because his name is Fergal Devitt, which is probably very confusing to people who don't actually know that. Like, what is that word she's saying? But yeah, it's, I thought that I would place her run at the top, probably the very, very top of any main roster talent that has visited NXT. And it doesn't even seem like it's necessarily over. She might have one or two more matches to work, but I thought everything she's brought to the show so far has just been pitch perfect.
Yeah, it's been excellent. And it's been a lot of fun. I think there are two schools of thought on the main roster people coming to NXT. The first is, no, we don't want them. You know, this is a developmental show. We want to see the younger wrestlers have a chance to shine. We want them to get TV time. And then there's the other people who say, no, bring them down, have them interact with the stars so that the NXT wrestlers seem like bigger stars eventually by virtue of interacting with these main roster wrestlers. So, you know, that's kind of – and I think both have merit, but it all depends on the booking, right? It all depends on when those main roster stars come down, how are they booked, how do they interact with these NXT wrestlers. And I think more often than not, you mentioned Judgment Day, I think more often than not, they've gotten that interaction right. So I think there's hope going forward that they found the recipe for mixing in those main roster wrestlers just right. So hopefully that is the case going forward. We'll do a little bit of reset here as we get to the bottom of the hour. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Kelly Wells, discussing Halloween Havoc, NXT's signature event this year, or one of their signature events. And then we'll talk about WWE Crown Jewel, which is coming up next Saturday. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to chat with us. And you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We'll do our first call of the evening. It is from Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us?
My first question is on, you were talking about Chase U. Is it possible how the end this is with Thea Hale throwing in the towel for Chase U to have a title change, since I heard the fans even chanting throw the towel when they wrestled on Tuesday?
Yeah, that would be a callback to a previous beat in this storyline, Kelly. And that would be, I guess, the moment of heel turn, probably, if you're looking for it, for Thea Hale. I mean, I don't know. Is it realistic that she would be plotting this whole time for that moment to really screw Chase U out of it? Does it seem realistic that she was faking all this enthusiasm, for example, for their title win all along? Or maybe she was enthusiastic because she knew them winning the titles means she could throw in the towel later on. That seems to be a bit of a reach, but I wouldn't rule it out. What do you think, Kelly?
So maybe it's just because I love Thea Hale's babyface work so much, but I genuinely think the right ending to this story is her to see that she might be being a little bit immature and to be the bigger person here. I like the idea of the towel getting introduced, and I like the idea of JC trying to goad Thea into throwing the towel in, Thea understanding what's really going on here. And Thea standing up to JC, and that's the moment of the split there. And Thea does stay with Chase U after all. I think that's the right ending to this. Thea as a heel, she's not a heel, but as a more heelish babyface and somebody who's been playing in that sandbox a little more, has been better than I would have guessed, because she just seems so natural on the babyface side of the ledger. But I still think it would be a majorly missed opportunity if she was not an underdog babyface for, I'll be honest, the entirety of her career. The height won't help her as a heel. It doesn't have to be a killer, but her very diminutive height won't help her as a heel. So I think that I absolutely think also that the towel is going to be introduced, but I think Thea stays in Chase U.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Okay, second question is on Ronda Rousey with her announcing that she's working for a independent league with, she's even appeared with some AEW stars. What are the odds that she beats Chris Statlander for the TBS title sometime maybe like next year or something? This being with a way of her, like, you know, these AEW wrestlers talking her into maybe signing with AEW.
I don't know if it's really cost effective for AEW, given what Ronda Rousey is likely to command in terms of a price tag. You know, but her WWE run really ended with a whimper, and I'm not sure. I think a lot of the name value that she had from fighting in MMA has sort of worn off because she's been away from that game for so long. And I don't think her WWE run did much to really extend that life of that, you know, that name value. So, I mean, there's always the chance that AEW could get a mega TV deal and they'll be swimming in money and it won't be but a drop in the bucket to pay Ronda Rousey to come in. We know that Tony Khan likes to kind of utilize big names here and there, you know, bringing in Mike Tyson and bringing in Shaquille O'Neal, although that was a crossover with Turner Networks. But, you know, he's not afraid to dabble in some of the more well-known names outside of pro wrestling who may have even an ancillary connection to pro wrestling. I just don't think that's a great message to the fan base. But, Kelly, what's your take on that?
Not just to the fan base, but to the wrestlers in the back who are all scrambling to get TV time and meaningful stories and just anything out of this division. I know that like a guy like Eric Bischoff in WCW, she would have been signed already. like for whatever name value, because he was like, stick it to Vince. That I don't know. I would have to think that Tony would see the strong downside of signing somebody like Ronda, who has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, fans and workers alike. And this last run, she just showed no passion for the business. She just went out there and seemingly went through the motions. And maybe that was the best she could do. But based on the fact that the first couple of things she did were so much better, it doesn't seem like it's the best thing she can do. Or maybe that one person was just not there holding their hand. I just don't think she's actually worth that kind of money anymore. I just don't know why you would throw that kind of money at her. I think his money and certainly his time is best spent elsewhere if he's going to rehabilitate the women's division.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is on this devil character that's appeared in AEW. Do you think it could be David Finlay or even CM Punk? I know people on social media have said that the devil's characteristics look like both of those wrestlers.
I would be surprised if it's Punk. I don't think it's him. Dave Finley, I mean, maybe certainly has a connection with Jay White through their New Japan days. I'm not sure, you know, and we know that AEW has a pretty good relationship with New Japan. I'm not sure if that makes a ton of sense in this particular storyline, however. I think it's, you know, I've seen the idea that it's Max Caster, which would be interesting. I think it's probably more likely to be him or someone else already on the AEW roster than it is to be someone outside it. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I like the idea of doing something like that with Finley, just because as a leader of Bullet Club, he's been fairly maligned in a lot of New Japan circles, New Japan being my favorite company. I see these Reddit conversations and everything like that. And Finley gets savaged to a level that I don't believe is at all warranted. I think he's fine, but I understand the idea that he's got big shoes to fill. They don't give that leadership of Bullet Club to just any gaijin. They want it to be somebody who is a big deal, who brings it in the ring and certainly brings it as a heel and has a lot of name value. And he has by far the least amount of name value of anybody who's taken up that mantle, but they just don't have that person. And I've been asked, who do you think should lead Bullet Club? And my own answer has been, I would just kill Bullet Club at this point. I honestly don't think they have anything more to do. I think this is like NWO Bret Hart at this point. It's just not happening anymore. I would move on from it. That said, if they want to get something out of Finley, make him a bigger deal, make it seem like he's rubbed elbows with people of a higher caliber and make him seem like a bigger star, a run in AEW might make sense. I still think, like you do, Greg, that it's somebody internal. But if it's somebody external, I think that this could do just worlds of good for somebody like David Finley.
Yeah. All right. So, Ryan, thanks for the phone call, as always.
Thanks for taking it.
We're going to stay in the Maryland area, I believe, with Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thank you so much, Greg and Kelly. Long time. It's good to be back. And how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. Good to hear from you tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm doing great. I love being on this show. Yep.
Yes, you're doing a wonderful job, Kelly Wells. It's always good to hear your voice, not just on Tuesday nights.
All right. Thanks, Keith.
Yes. I want to briefly touch on that five-star classic from last night. The Best Bout Machine versus MJF, I thought they really put on a great match. I know Tony Khan was taking the heat for precisely duplicating what Eric Bischoff did with the Georgia Dome match between Hogan and Goldberg, but this match wasn't on that caliber, so to speak, as far as the shock value or the name value. But the match itself, man, I'm going to tell you, it was one of the top five, if not one of the top three matches of the year for any promotion. And I'm just hopping on board. I know you had Ryan on a few minutes ago, and I don't know if you touched on this the first 15 minutes of the broadcast. But what were your thoughts on Tony Khan essentially treating us to this 30-minute, 14-second match on free TV as opposed to making an awful lot of money on pay-per-view?
Yeah, definitely an interesting decision, a decision met with a lot of criticism in certain circles of the online wrestling discourse. And I can really see both sides. You know, I think that the way it ended up playing out made it worth it. I think there were a lot of people who thought that the way this was handled by Tony Khan in terms of the announcement, in terms of the real lack of time you would like to build up a match of this caliber, meant that it was going to go short or there was going to be some kind of interference, an unsatisfying finish, something along those lines, when, as it turned out, it had a clean finish. It went 30 minutes, as Reverend Keith alluded to. And so I think it was really satisfying. I think it's just one of those things where I think Tony Khan wants to treat the fans to major television matches. I don't think he's as interested in holding them all back for pay-per-view as we are taught sort of from a previous generation. And, you know, on one hand, you look at the AEW pay-per-view schedule and you say, well, they only do a handful of pay-per-views a year, so unless you're going to hold out on all the big matches and keep pushing them back, you're going to have to do some big matches on TV at some point. Now, you could also argue, hey, I'm not against MJF versus Omega on TV, but give it a few weeks' build, which, again, I totally get. But with AEW in 2024 likely going to a pay-per-view model where they do more pay-per-views per year, then you say, are they really going to be able to give away matches like this on TV when they have to come up with main events for more pay-per-views now to get people to buy in? And we also have to understand that this does not preclude Tony Khan from doing MJF versus Kenny Omega on pay-per-view sometime down the line. I think that there's this idea that because they've done it on free TV, it loses a lot of its luster or, you know, first time, whatever like that. But with a deeper storyline and with these guys maybe, I don't know, in different places in their careers, 3, 6, 9 months down the line, you can still get people to pay for this main event, especially now that they know, wow, that was a really good match and they're going to do it again. I'd like to see that. You know, I think there's that part of it, too. There's just so many angles here, Kelly, to look at this match from. I don't think it's as easy to say, no, they shouldn't have done it, or yes, it was a good idea to do it. I think there are just too many tentacles to analyze coming out of this this announcement and the way everything was handled.
Yeah, and even before the match, we could have said, hey, maybe it'll go out there, work for 8 minutes, and then there will be a schmoz finish. And then we would have said, okay, well, that makes sense. And that isn't what happened. But I don't think that's such a bad thing either. You know, some people can't afford pay-per-views. Do you never serve them? Do you never give them a match? So that's part of it. I also am very much with you on, yeah, you just ripped the words right out of my mouth when you said they don't do a lot of pay-per-views. You need some of these matches have to be on free TV. And I think some should just, not the lion's share of them. Also, you've got MJF in this match. If you need to make this hot enough for pay-per-view again, rest assured he will make that work. He absolutely will. It won't be difficult to get something that is worthy of being a main event on a pay-per-view out of these guys if they want to do it. And I've just always thought the talk of was overblown, where if two guys have wrestled before, that somehow makes it so you can't do it effectively another time on a major show. This isn't the territory days. This isn't kayfabe days. if they want to do it again, they'll make it work. And I mean, we're talking about NXT a little bit tonight, and they're running back Ilya Carmelo for the third time. I know this is a very small, that's small potatoes compared to a major promotion and main roster, but I'm just as excited for the third time of them running that back as I was the first. And it's all in the telling of the story and all in the, yeah, we know that the two are going to deliver. I mean, they delivered a lot of very, very good moments that I have seen over and over on Twitter since. So there you go. I'm not on the side that you should never do this. I wouldn't do it much myself, but I'm not on that side that you should never do this.
WWE just got two pay-per-view main events out of Shinsuke Nakamura challenging Seth Rollins, when by all accounts they shouldn't have gotten even one. So, yeah, I think they can go to MJF versus Omega again down the line, and it won't hurt them much. So that's my thought on it anyway. Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
And I totally agree with both of your commentaries on the point and the topics that I brought up. I totally agree, and I believe that Tony Khan will. He will eventually make money off of it, but I like the way he treated the fans, especially in lieu of the high voltage of pay-per-views that he's been offering and expecting the fans to shell out $50 a pop. For example, when he did the two pay-per-views within a 7-day period, All In and then All Out, and then came right back with Wrestle Dream, and now he has just come up with World's End. So, you know, now that he's going to the one pay-per-view per month format like WWE has done for over 20 years, I think that it is kind of him and generous to, you know, give the fans a treat, you know? I mean, you know, hardworking fans, they deserve that. So, but I don't know if you guys heard or saw the footage from the post-match, and it was excellent. Great show of sportsmanship on both guys' parts, especially Kenny Omega, who really put MJF over, and the crowd was into it. Both post-match comments from both MJF and Kenny were met with a lot of high acclaim, both on social media and, you know, video footage, and people alike, you know, wrestling journalists. And so if you haven't had a chance to watch it, have you seen it yet, Greg?
I don't think I have. In fact, I just watched that match back this morning, so I haven't had a lot of time to dig further into the match.
Okay. Well, when you get a chance, you and Kelly combined, go and watch the post-match footage right after it went off the air, before they began taping Ring of Honor. The two of them combined was in the ring for like 10 minutes. MJF spoke for 3 and Kenny for 7, and they were both complimentary of each other's careers, and it was good that they broke character, both of them. So go back and take a listen to that. Moving ahead, I think that WWE has done a wonderful job in portraying Jade Cargill's arrival, the way that they've presented her on all platforms, and she is truly being, you know, aligned with the stars, you know, Becky, Charlotte, Sasha, when she was in the company, Bailey, and the other four horsewomen, you know, and it's good to see that, you know. I take it from what we saw on Tuesday's Halloween Havoc Night 1 that she'll probably start in NXT, which will probably be better for her. But no matter where she goes, I think that she'll eventually be a free agent and be able to levy between all three shows. What are your thoughts on Kate?
Yeah, I think they've started slowly, which I think is the right move in terms of introducing her to the audience and treating her, as you said, like a big star. And they've certainly so far, and it's very early, I mean, she hasn't really had much time, but they have taken advantage, it seems, of her presence, of her social media reach, and really the pluses that come along with having someone like Jade Cargill on the roster. They've really taken advantage of that in the early goings here. Kelly, what do you think about how they've introduced Jade Cargill so far?
I'm crazy about it, because you already they know that we know that she's on the roster. They didn't have to acknowledge that. They could have allowed us to just have that hanging over their heads, our heads. Like we could see reasons, legitimate reasons, to start her on the main roster or in NXT. We could see reasons for both of those to happen. I agree that it should be NXT. I know they gotta just want to get fast track.
You're a little biased here, to be fair, Kelly, wanting her on NXT. I mean, come on, you cover the show for the torch.
yeah. I am crazy about her, and I do cover NXT, so I would love to talk about her. Crazy about her potential. Let's put it that way. Yeah, she's – I think, too, that NXT is going to be where she starts. It'll be interesting how they start her. If they make her kind of a tweener and they still continue to build that anticipation, like they're building that anticipation now, I think they've gotten a lot out of putting her just very briefly and silently on camera. They're really doing a good job of building anticipation. She needs reps. That is the one thing that she has been lacking the most. It has not been a great place to develop in AEW. If you're a skilled worker, you can work there all day long. It's great. But if you're developing, it's not yet the place to be. So I think she's in the right place for her and her career. And, I love the presentation so far, and I cannot wait to see what's next.
All right, Reverend Keith, your final question for us tonight.
Moving onward to Crown Jewel and keeping the focus on the women's division in WWE, it's delightful to see that they've come such a long way that they're going to have at least, as of now, 7 female performers on this premium live event from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia this coming Saturday. You have the women's Fatal 5-Way, and then you have the other match that was just signed, Bianca versus Io. I could see them doing a title change here with Bianca, and if not, I could see them using the fact that Bianca does not gain back the title by moving her towards a heel turn. I wouldn't necessarily want to see that, but I would like to see Bianca with more of an edgy side to her, kind of like what they're doing with Drew. You know, they don't necessarily have to turn Drew heel or turn Bianca heel, but just make them more edgy. But either way, it's good to see the women now being more accepted in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and, having 2 title matches. I remember when they couldn't even have 1. Now they're having 2 title matches involving 7 women total. Give me your thoughts on the women's parameters in the Kingdom, Crown Jewel at large. Once again, it's delightful to be back on this show, and have a wonderful night. God bless you. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you, Reverend Keith, for calling in. I always love to hear from you. We'll talk a little bit more about Crown Jewel later on. Actually, we'll touch on those matches when we get to it. So, Reverend Keith, we will answer those a little later in the show. But I want to move before we go back to our phones. I see DJ on hold. We'll get to him in just a few minutes. But I want to touch on Night 2 of Halloween Havoc first before we do that. The match is set for Tuesday night, Kalani Jordan versus Lola Vice in the Women's Breakout Tournament Finals. The Creeds take on Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo in a Tables, Ladders, Scares match. Dominic Mysterio against Nathan Frazier for the North American title. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven against Thea Hale and JC Jane for the women's tag titles. Tiffany Stratton versus Fallon Henry and Ilya Dragunov versus Carmelo Hayes. NXT title is on the line. Couple things jump out to me. I love when Dominic runs into people who he doesn't know. Like when he thought the one masked wrestler was the other masked wrestler several weeks ago in NXT, and now I think he ran into Nathan Frazier and didn't know who he was. So it just sort of fits with his kind of pompous attitude. So I love that. Also, Fallon Henley, her impression of Tiffany Stratton last week on NXT Halloween Havoc was chef's kiss. I mean, oh my gosh, that was so perfectly done. And
the best thing she's done on the brand, the very best.
there, to be fair, not a ton of competition for that spot, but that was absolutely fantastic. Loved how they pulled that off. Any comments about night two, what to expect, what you're looking forward to? Any comments on these matches for night two of Halloween Havoc?
I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. Not necessarily recapping it because there's, you know what? There's no multi-person matches. It might not be so bad. Certainly looking forward to Dragunov Hayes. And it's funny, Dragunov's been great as champion already. He's got a championship swagger I just absolutely love. And I like that he's extremely hard-nosed, but he's still playing a beloved type character. This is Ilya's who I asked about on, I don't know if it was the last NXT media call, the one before that, something like that. But man, oh man, oh man, Sean just gushed about him and said, like, what you're seeing on TV is just kind of an amped up version of who he is. He really is that good at putting over his fellow worker, at being there for people. He's there longer than anybody. He just really wants to help the brand get better, to help everyone get better, and not just better himself. And he's very intense, but he's a positive kind of intense. And, you know, if I didn't already love the guy, that made me love him even more. And I love Carmelo Hayes, and I love what they're doing with him. I'm really – it's funny that Ilya is kind of a side character in his own main event, but what they're doing – is with Carmelo and Trick. That is what we're really, really looking forward to here and seeing how this particular match fits into that. So I'm psyched about that. Interested in the women's tag, mostly for the Hale and Jane. Like, what are they going to do there? Yeah, Dirty Dom doing what he's doing has been very funny. And it's especially funny with the luchadors, because for him to take that kind of dump on the luchadors is so much like the exact kind of thing that made him heel in the first place. Like, what a little brat to, like, turn his back on that. I adore that. Creeds and Garza and Creo will be fun. Just, again, bump machines for the Creeds. It'll be great. And I'm going to give you a lead pipe guarantee. Mr. Stone beats Braun Breaker when Von Wagner interferes. I think
that's right.
For real, that Mr. Stone is winning that match, and he won't look like a winner, but I really think that's what they're going to do with him, because they've created a version of Braun that is kind of Teflon. Like, he loses a match and it's not a big deal because he's just so dominating and terrifying. And I thought maybe he'd be that top guy, but I think he could be a long-term Kane for this company, and that could be a really good fit.
Yeah. I forgot about that match, quote unquote match as well, of Mr. Stone against Braun Breaker. And, you know, to go back to what you were saying about Ilya Dragunov, I feel like we should touch on him a little more because he is the new champion. I loved the sit down interview that Vic Joseph did with him on NXT. I believe it was this past week, because it was just a different, not a different version, but a different atmosphere for this character, who you see as this uber intense guy who, you know, ends up bloodied at the end of his matches, but you don't really know a lot about him outside of that. So I thought getting an opportunity to hear from him in that environment, not in front of the fans in the ring, but in a sit-down interview with Vic Joseph, I thought that was so effective in letting fans in to that character, because I don't feel like necessarily they've been let into the character. I think he does a really good job in his matches of getting fans engaged, but I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I think it was this last week, although my memory is goldfish-like. But I thought that was a necessary thing to do with him, but they've been doing that. They've been telling his – I don't know if it's can you be both a dominating machine and an underdog? That is the question that I think they're trying to answer with Ilya, because he really is both. Nobody has shown as much passion for just having to be champion. A lot of these wrestlers have been great at looking like they want to be champion. He looks like he has to be champion, or he just hates himself and hates life. I just really think, I mean, that's a good gimmick if you can get it. The Triple H's gimmick was essentially being champion when he was on top of the company. But,
what a pitch. Here's my gimmick.
Yeah.
I'm the champion. That's who I am.
Well, seems a little manipulative there, Hunter. I don't know. I just can't say enough good about him. I watched the entire run of NXT UK, and when I heard that he was coming over, I wasn't surprised, but man, oh man, was I jacked and amped and ready. Just so excited to see what he's going to do. This matchup of him and Hayes, this is probably about the most I have liked both members of a championship match in a very, very long time. I just think that the sky's the limit for both guys.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be high-level match, main event, fitting of a themed show like this. So really looking forward to that. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't mention Scarlett and Shotzi hosting both nights of Halloween Havoc. And, of course, both of them completely 100% in their elements and doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, I mean, Shotzi normally sounds like she's spoken English before. Scarlett's okay. it's been...
Some familiarity,
you know,
with the language.
The more weird, high-concept stuff they're asked to do, the more they shine. When they need to be grounded, it ain't all that. But when they have to do the weird stuff, they're game. So, hard to say that they chose wrong there.
All right, we go to the 305 area code. It's DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first question for us?
Going back to EAW again, or do you guys want to stay with WWE?
Totally up to you. Doesn't matter the order.
I guess you guys are already talking about WWE, so I guess we'll start with that one. Going into the LA Knight thing the other night, I feel like it's so crazy how he's so over, like a Stone Cold kind of thing. And it's just like Roman's so lazy. It's just like Paul Heyman's definitely doing his thing with the hair coloring. We've definitely never seen that before. But just in general, he is not a fighting champion. I feel like LA Knight's a fighting champion. And it's just like after Crown Jewel, I feel like they're just going to bury him or put him down the ladder. I feel like give him what they want already and then let Roman rest or at least give it to him for a month or something, because I feel like it's kind of weird how they're so over, like the Stone Cold fan, you know, they haven't seen this in a long time and let the fans do what they want. But in general, it's just like he's really decent wrestler, and I don't know what they're going to really do at the end of the day. I think they should do something with him, you know what I'm saying? Because he's so over right
now.
Well,
they are doing something with him. He's main eventing a pay-per-view. That's no small feat. That doesn't mean he needs to win. And I would argue that he shouldn't win here. But all the feelings that you're expressing, DJ, those are the feelings WWE wants you to feel. They want you to feel those things so that you
over,
can. Well, yes, but here's what I would caution you. Go on YouTube when you're done with this call. Go find Steve Austin Monday Night War entrance. That is the Steve Austin pop. LA Knight's really over, okay? But he's not Steve Austin. He's not Steve Austin.
You know what I'm saying.
That is on... So let's just kind of pump the brakes a little bit on LA Knight is over. We don't have to exaggerate to the lengths to which he's over. Kelly, I'll spin this over to you. LA Knight versus Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns probably going to win this. You talked about your lock, lead pipe lock. I think Roman Reigns winning is probably fits into that category, but what do you do next with LA Knight then? How do you make sure to continue to capitalize on his overness, even in a losing situation like this?
Yeah, I mean, do you just repeat what they did with Cody, where they kept him hot by moving him into that tag team division for a very short amount of time, making it seem like he was still tangentially involved, like he was still getting something over on that group, doing something there? I could see this moving to Solo Sikoa and maybe kind of continuing to rub elbows there, because I think Sokoa goes over Cena. I do think this is a lock of Roman beating LA Knight. And I will say the part of what DJ is saying that is compelling to me is the idea that you do want to strike when the iron's hot. And I get that totally. And I guess the question for them is how much can we get out of this stone before we absolutely need to strike? Because they didn't, like, Rock wasn't there the first time that he had a chance, and Austin wasn't either. And Austin kind of defined the whole better without the belt than with it babyface that there is. Him chasing that championship, no matter who had it at that point, whether it was Triple H or Rock or Vince McMahon, you wanted him to be chasing that. It was exciting to see him chase that. And I guess the question is, how long will people accept that from LA Knight before he has to win it? Because LA Knight's getting to be a major star much later in his life than, considerably so. Older than quite a bit older than Rock, somewhat older than Austin. He's pushing 40. Is he 40? He's close. But he's not a young man. I'm not surprised that he has caught on. He is somebody that I had my eye on, even him when he was in NWA. I just thought, you know, he's irritating, but he's the right kind of irritating. I can't believe that they don't want him on a bigger stage. And when they brought him in and then they threw him out there as Max Dupree, I thought, okay, well, there it is. Vince doesn't get him. what are they going to do? But I would also argue, like you, Greg, that he shouldn't win this one, that that you want him to chase and that you want him to be defined by something he has to overcome. But whatever they wanted to do with Roman Reigns losing this championship, like, does that change now? Because you have somebody who's as hot as LA Knight. You can't just take every hot babyface and move them over to Raw because they can't beat Roman. You'll have all the babyfaces on Raw at some point.
Yeah, and I've made the argument quite often on the show that, you know, I have no problem giving LA Knight a secondary title, whether it's the U.S. title, whether it's the IC title, whatever the case may be. You know, even if you want to send him to Raw and have him win the world title or whatever it's called, I guess. You know, I've got no problem with that, but I don't think you throw 3 years of storyline build away because you have a hot act. I think that's the right move. I think fans would be satisfied with a secondary title. I don't think fans are necessarily clamoring for him to win the big title. I think they understand that there's a larger story at play here with Roman Reigns. DJ, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
Yeah, it was just funny how he's so over. You know, I just like that, you know, compared to, like, going to A-Town. So we'll see really what happens with him, you know. I just like how the people are so over. My second thing is going to EAW. Did you watch the thing on YouTube that afterwards how MJF put over Kenny and how he kissed his butt and I have a second part of the question that I want to ask you, but, you know, how he was so a baby face. It was so unbelievable. I was like, well, this is not MJF in general. And then, you know, then all of a sudden you see Kenny acting like, oh, I love you, man. Well, but it was just so, you know what I mean? It was so weird how they did that. But he said something about Cody, and he said something about Cody before, 4-4. My second part of the question is that, is this keep on saying Cody is because he brought everybody together, or do you think that this, hey, Cody, one day you can come back? But my first thing is, isn't that crazy how MJF is like, it was so weird how he was such a babyface and so strange.
Yeah, Reverend Keith brought that promo up in the last call. I haven't seen it. I don't know, Kelly, if you've seen it, but certainly something that's kind of interesting because, you know, if it is what it sounds like, it's not a side of MJF that you've seen even in this babyface character that he's portraying right now. So that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, the Cody stuff, I think it's just that they're not going to shy away from saying his name if what they're talking about is relevant. And the fact is, he played a big part in a lot of the early days of AEW and a lot of these guys getting a shot in the early days of AEW. And I think we're kind of used to an era of, oh, if this wrestler is on the competition, we're not going to acknowledge him. We're not going to say his name. We're going to dance around the subject. But especially when you're off air, there's really no harm in saying it. So, you know, Kelly played a major role. I mean, he was an executive in AEW. So the fact that his name is brought up, whether you think it's frequently, whether you think it's infrequently, whatever the case may be, it's just whenever something happens that Cody played a part in, they're just not going to shy away from it. They're going to acknowledge that he did play a part in it.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head when you said this was off air, because this doesn't even have to be canon. Like, this doesn't even have to be real, you know what I mean? And so the fact that MGF was acting so babyface in this moment doesn't even have to be a big deal, because, like, what is and what is not part of the show is a little bit nebulous these days, with the fact that you can see all this internet content that isn't necessarily – it's watched by so, so many fewer people than see the actual shows. So you don't have to act – like, you don't have to – they don't have to acknowledge this on TV. They can if they want, but it wasn't on TV for a reason. So – They could have put this on TV and they chose not to. So that goes to show me that this is not necessarily something that they need everyone to know about, or something that they need people to think about when they think about the current characters, as far as who they are on TV. And as far as the Cody thing goes, this is not your father's wrestling war. This is not WWF versus WCW Monday Night Wars, and speaking another wrestler's name being verboten unless you were trying to bury them completely. It's not that kind of childish mudslinging. I think it's kind of a brave new world out there. If you want to kind of recognize somebody who was instrumental in you getting where you are, go ahead. Guys are doing it on Twitter. Like, Edge had so many nice things to say about WWE when he went to another company. Chris Jericho handles it a little bit differently, a little bit more old school. He really, really becomes a company man the second he's in a company. And I think both of those are valid ways to run your own personal business. But I wouldn't look into that as far as anything as the show is concerned.
And DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
I want to add, you should definitely watch it. I mean, he was definitely, it was so strange how he's so put over. And he, like, I'm like, what? It was just so crazy, you know? So, and then how you can tell it was off air was because he said F beginning. So, my third thing is that, I don't know if you guys really noticed, but EAW, some of the WWE guys are doing it, like Jay is, like, doing the punch and doing the open hand. But these guys in EAW, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. It's like, do you guys really practice, or you just go get another practice? Like, the other day, the guy, like, messed up and, like, hit the dude on his head, you know. And then I saw the other day when he did the backflip, and he's like, oh, we can mess up. Let's do it again, the triple Lindy. It's just like, they're really going to hurt themselves. And then some of them will go in the ring and miss, like, by 6 feet. It's like, I don't understand. It's like, if you really need to pay attention, and I'm not sure what the fans think of that in general, that you're just practicing new stuff, and I don't know. It's just, like, so weird, like, especially with Jay opening his hand out. As soon as you punch, and it so open his hand, like, you could see it. It's like, we have slow motion now. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wrestlers who do the punch open hand. I think it traditionally in wrestling, a closed fist is illegal, although I'm not sure that's really all that closely monitored these days. But I think the larger point of AEW, especially of trying things and maybe not hitting them on the first try, and you have a lot of guys getting injured. And I think there was a blurb in the Wrestling Observer recently that said, you know, AEW's lack of house shows, AEW's roster where some of the wrestlers wrestle so infrequently is actually tougher on the body because they're, you know, they're sort of in a way bringing their body out of hibernation every 2 or 3 weeks to wrestle. And it's a lot easier if you're wrestling more consistently, a couple times a week, to stay in that wrestling shape, to stay consistent and to, you know, hit your mark, so to speak, on what you need to do in the ring. So that's kind of my take on it. You know, AEW does seem to have more injuries per capita, I guess, than WWE does. And, Kelly, that's as good a reason I've heard as any that's happening.
Yeah, and, you know, people will chalk it up to a more unsafe style, and I absolutely think that the greater reason is because of the lack of reps. There's a reason these guys go out there, and they work on stuff together, and they have 10, 15 house show matches against each other before they have a big match on a great stage that's going to get a lot of minutes. And it's not going to be perfect. You're going to have the injury bug regardless of what you're doing to try to avoid it or not. But I'm not as close an AEW viewer as I am of New Japan or of WWE, but I drop in and drop out, and I do notice that it's depending on who's in the ring, sometimes it's not quite as clean as it might be. And that's where I always land. There's some opportunity to get reps, but for some of them, for the ones that are just waiting a long time between matches and aren't necessarily booking a lot of outside matches, and I know he does allow some of that, it's got to be tough to stay ready and to be able to get into that ring and really perform at a high level and to do everything you want to do and to do it safely and do it right, even though you haven't had a lot of time together in the ring. I don't know. I feel like this is something that should have been solved already, and so much of the money that has gone into new talents, some of that could have been on trying to figure out a way to develop these guys and keep them sharp for when their big moments come.
Absolutely. DJ, thanks so much for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon. All right. So before we get to our email question of the week, I want to quickly go through Crown Jewel, starting with what's possibly the main event, maybe likely the main event, Roman Reigns versus LA Knight, WWE Universal title match. I think we kind of covered that with the last call. So let's go to Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre, world title here. I'm loving the shades of gray, I guess, if you want to call it, of Drew McIntyre's character. I think the shades of gray sort of gets a bad rap because Vince Russo tried it and it turned out so poorly in so many instances. But to me, this is one of those where it's like, okay, he's babyface-ish, and the reasons he lays out why he's not maybe a complete babyface, I totally get, and it makes a lot of sense. So it works on that level. You're always kind of thinking a heel turn is coming around the corner, which, you know, keeps you on your toes as a viewer. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as the internal consistency of the character is there. So I really like what they've done with Drew McIntyre here.
Yeah, I've never thought that it was something that couldn't work. I just thought it wasn't working at that time for whatever reason, or wasn't working with those talents. But especially watching other companies pull it off, New Japan most notably, having to keep a lot of guys near the middle and just having them shift a little bit when the time is right for them to act face or act heel. And then otherwise most of the year kind of sitting in a place in between. You've got entire factions that lean slightly babyface, but in the right match, they're working heel. I think that they're really pulling it off here with Drew. This is one of the two possible title changes. I'm predicting none. I don't know if that's what you want to do over and over at Crown Jewel and say, hey, thanks for the glorified house show. where's our money? But But I'm not predicting any specific ones for this one with one possible exception we'll get to. But yeah, I think that if you want to turn Drew full on heel eventually, he has to lose this. And that has to be something that defines him. But if you want him to stay where he is because you like where he is, you can do either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That's the other good thing about it is, you know, if you want to turn him full heel, want to turn him full babyface, both options are at your disposal at this point, and both will make a lot of sense. The women's world title is on the line. Rhea Ripley defends against Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark, and Raquel Rodriguez. How does Rhea Ripley get out of this as champion, Kelly?
Oh, I don't know how, but she does, because this is a – it seems like they dislike actually changing the title in these as much as I do. I'm like, by all means, give me the match, but if the title changes hands, if it's at all unpredictable, I'm going to be very sad. I just don't think that the new champion gains a lot, unless it's a heel and they're supposed to kind of snake it away from somebody, and yeah, I get it. But I don't know the reason that she gets away with this one. I'd prefer to have it just be comes down to her and Nia, and she is the more beastly of the two beasts and sets down Nia for, let's say, forever. But I think that the rest of them get paired off and Rhea sneaks away with this one. I just don't see this setting, this five-person setting, being a very interesting way to end what has been a very gripping title reign.
Yeah, I feel like this has some train wreck potential too, because there's going to have to be a lot of directing traffic in this one, and we'll see how that turns out. Rey Mysterio versus Logan Paul for the United States Championship. You know, Logan Paul doing what he does and getting under the skin of a babyface, but it also feels like, well, it's Saudi Arabia. Let me check my watch. Yep, it's time for Logan Paul to make an appearance. You know, there are certain wrestlers who you can set your watch to what time of year it is, what season it is, based on when they make appearances. And hey, you know, if he's making money off of it, I guess all the more power to him. And it's going to be a really good match. So I guess I shouldn't complain or be too sarcastic about it. But yeah, I mean, this is one, they've got some history and they're coming back to it here, which we've not seen a lot from Logan Paul, maybe with The Miz earlier on, but at least Logan Paul is in the right spot as a heel now.
You know, this isn't one of the two that I was giving a chance to change hands, even though maybe I should, because Logan Paul does have to get in there and win some matches if he's going to continue to have value the next time he shows up. And that's why he beat Ricochet. And I don't think that most of us doubted that he would beat Ricochet, but that's why he had to do a match like that. This is something that he could do and win this, but unless he's going on the road, I don't know that they want to essentially tell the same story as, not the same, but a similar story to Roman Reigns, where you've got a heel who is cool, too cool for school. He doesn't have to go out there and defend his title because he's just entirely too important. It just feels like we will have seen it before. Maybe they get away with it because not on the same night or whatever, but I don't know that they want another champion who's that absent. This one has me a little bit more stymied than a lot of the others, which I feel like are layups.
I do wonder, though, because he just had his most recent fight, so one would imagine he's not going to have another fight for some time. You know, you could have him win the title and be a full-time character for maybe 2 or 3 months on TV, so he is more present than not, just based on his fighting schedule. So I wonder if that's something that they would do.
Yeah, I don't pay a lot of attention to the fights. I couldn't tell you that he just had a fight because I just don't
him
live in that
brother.
World.
I get them confused when it comes to fighting. So, So whatever the case is, there was just a big fight because he was talking about it in his promo on TV, and so I would assume that gives him a little bit of free time.
Yeah, if you can get 2 to 3 months out of him, then by all means, I mean, I've been spoiled having this championship reign for Rey Mysterio, who's just one of my all-time favorites, and I just did not think would ever win a meaningful singles title again in this company. So it's just been gravy to have him do so. And I know that at some point the slipper will fall off, but maybe this is the time he does get something out of beating Mysterio. And as long as they got somebody lined up who can get the rub of taking the title away from the brattiest character they have, then I say, sure, go for it.
Cody Rhodes versus Damian Priest. Priest still holds the Money in the Bank briefcase. And he's been kind of steamrolled a little bit in terms of the leadership position of Judgment Day by Rhea Ripley. What's been your impression of that relationship as it's developed over the last several weeks?
I think we talked about this. It's been a few months since the last time that we did this together. I've been on this show without you. But I think the last time we did it together, we talked about how it's so strange that Judgment Day was just on fumes and seemingly it was the time to get rid of it. And that's when it got interesting. I've got to think that they maybe thought, okay, time to split it up. We can have this infighting between a few of them. And then it got to be such good TV and got over so well that they said, okay, but if we're going to do this, let's take it slow. It wouldn't surprise me if this was a tiny audible where they were going to have done this already, but they didn't. Because of what they had. I like that Priest is remaining focal, that they're not giving him this run with the Money in the Bank briefcase that makes it clear that this is going to be Baron Corbin getting beaten in a few seconds or Damian Sandow getting steamrolled. So I don't know that he wins that championship when it's time, but I like that he's a little bit more focal. That said, I don't know how you put him over Cody unless you want Cody to go on some, oh man, I'm losing in a lot of big spots sort of story. And I don't think that's what you got out of Cody. So I got to say Cody wins this, but follow up with Damian Priest will be key.
John Cena versus Solo Sikoa. You mentioned earlier, I think, that you think Solo Sikoa is going to win this one. I find it a little harder to go that direction given the speech that Cena gave on SmackDown, where he's like, not sure the fans are going to be behind him, and like, you know, I need to win this because if I don't, you're all going to leave me. It's just like this kind of weird promo in one sense. And really, like, if he's going to be a character consistently on TV for the foreseeable future, which it seems like he is with the strike and everything like that, you almost have to have him win this. We've seen Solo isn't as protected now as he once was, so it seems like it's easier for him to take a loss. But, yeah, I kind of think Cena maybe wins here, especially if they want to get more use out of him, especially if he's going to be a consistent part of TV moving forward.
And even if you're not protecting Solo, even if you are protecting Solo as much as you ever were, there's no shame in doing the job to John Cena.
Right.
You're better for having been trusted with that match in the first place. I just think that, I don't know, because how much more do they need to get out of Cena in the ring? But that, I felt so much stronger about Solo until it was only about 3 or 4 hours ago that I watched SmackDown that I was finally able to fit that in. And that speech was pretty powerful. I loved the way that he listened to the crowd and worked that into it, where they said, you still got it. And he smiled, then he lost his smile and said, but what if I don't? I just really thought that was a nice touch in what was already this interesting but very, very strange and uncharacteristic existential moment from a guy who one of his biggest criticisms was that he never acted like the character was taking it seriously enough. That's one of his biggest strengths now. It's just so strange. I think I talked myself into the idea that Solo is right there as a major opponent for LA Knight coming out of this. And so that's the best reason to have Solo win, to be like this strong, unstoppable force to face LA Knight. Although it does occur to me, it is Cena. So even if Solo loses this, he can, the Solo LA Knight feud is still going to be hot. So I come in a little less sure of it than I was, but I'm going to bullheadedly stick with Solo here.
Okay, sounds good. And finally, we have Io Sky versus Bianca Belair, WWE Women's title match. Really looking forward to this one. I think this has the potential to be a show stealer if they're allowed to really show what they can do in the ring from an athleticism standpoint. It's going to be really interesting to see Bianca just coming back after a long layoff. And, you know, I'm not sure where she fits in. I know Reverend Keith, I believe, had talked about her with a more serious side. And I immediately thought of Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits and her husband being a part of that group. And if she were to go more serious to the point where she even makes a heel turn, would that be a possibility for her? She just feels so WWE branded with her promos and how she acts. You know, I feel like she needs to get out of that box a little bit and be a little bit more real, as weird as that sounds. What's your take on where Bianca is right now? She just had a long layoff, just coming back.
Well, we know she can play a heel. She did that in NXT for her entire run, and it was good. We know that she can pull that off. We know she can be snotty and entitled. I guess the main problem is she's one of their go-to ambassadors. They don't want to turn her for the same reason that they didn't want to turn Cena and they didn't want to turn Roman for all those years, that they wanted them to be like the faces of the company, the trusted baby faces that can be on the commercials with kids. That's what she has become against the odds.
And she is really good at that.
Yes. And, you know, and she was, and that's not clearly what they thought she was going to be based on the fact that she was a heel for her NXT run, but it's what she's become. And that's why it's so much harder to believe that they're going to turn her, even with Montez Ford turning heel. And they don't have to make a big deal about that. We know if they want to stop talking about Becky and Seth, they just will. They can do that if they feel like just ripping that or putting the Band-Aid back on, I guess would be in this case. So they don't have to make mention of that. So I don't think she'll turn, even though this story seems ripe for something like that. It also feels like we're ripe for Io to turn babyface. So if they wanted to do a double turn, they certainly could. It seemed like Io was going that way until recently, and then she won that match with Charlotte the way she did. And I said, okay, well, clearly they've pumped the brakes a little bit. This is the match I'm most excited about, with apologies to Reigns and Knight, which I definitely want to see how that's booked. But this is the match that by far I want to see the most. I loved both of them for their entire runs. And before that, I don't catch as much women's wrestling from Japan because watching NJPW takes up a lot of time, but I saw some of Io there. I've been a fan of her for many years, and I couldn't be more excited for this match.
Well, let's go to our final segment here tonight, and this is an email from John. We had to postpone from last week and get to it this week. It's a lengthy email, even by John's standards. So we'll try to get through this as quickly as we can here as we end things. He says, "Hi, Greg and Kelly. Hope you're both doing well. Let me start off by quickly giving my reactions to yours and John Mazzara's discussion reacting to my question regarding who you would pick from John Cena and Roman Reigns as your top star if starting your own wrestling promotion. I agreed with some of your points in that it is a close contest and neither is a bad choice, and both at their respective peaks are phenomenal at what they do. However, you both said that whether either of them was willing to put others over or not wasn't really relevant. I'll quickly explain what I meant and why I think it is relevant. When you reach a certain talent level and gain a level of influence, I think a person's attitude is very important. If my top talent is strongly resistant to my booking plans, then I may at some point question if they are the right choice to be my top star. Steve Austin was in situations like this, and The Rock and many other top stars. Steve Austin apparently didn't want to work with Jeff Jarrett at one point, or put over, to phrase it differently, and walked out when he was told he needed to put over Brock Lesnar on Raw. He was right that Raw probably wasn't the right time to do the Lesnar match, especially losing clean, but my point is that walking out still illustrates how one wrestler having a massive amount of power can also have bad side effects. Generally, I would discuss with a wrestler if they're passionate about telling a story right and not losing on a whim, if they don't personally feel it's right, but I would hope that they trust my instincts as a writer-booker and know I have only the best intentions. Vince may not have had the right instincts when Austin walked out, but I feel like Austin could have handled it better as well. But he was beat up and in a bad place at the time in his life, so I don't judge him for him having enough and walking out. I'm not saying John Cena or Roman Reigns would have ever walked out if they were asked to put over a once-in-a-generation rising star super athlete like Brock Lesnar, but the reason why putting others over was one of my categories last week was because I feel it's important for a top star to not consider themselves above putting others over, and just as importantly, doing what's best for the business and the storyline. To give a hypothetical example, if Roman Reigns was going to lose the title to Cody Rhodes or Jey Uso at WrestleMania and SummerSlam respectively, but it was nixed because Roman said no, I would consider that a problem. Same with if Cena also rejected the idea of putting the right talent over. If winning every match and getting an immense amount of protected booking is important to my top star, I could work with that to an extent, but they cannot think of themselves as above the company or the fans and above losing from time to time. I also realize there are other ways to put someone over besides losing to them, but I don't think anyone can deny that losing to someone 1-2-3 or by submission is still the best way, as long as you do it sparingly and someone doesn't lose often. I feel if your top star loses 3 matches a year clean against the right opponents, it doesn't suddenly make them weak. My point was simply that while Roman definitely has put others over in other ways, it wouldn't mean anywhere near as much as a definitive loss or 2 or 3 times over the last few years, even if it was non-title, so he could still surpass 1,000 days as champion. Otherwise, I agree it's a close contest and neither is a bad choice, and you're probably right that Roman Reigns will be a much better babyface this time around. Question. Now that you've read my explanation, what are your thoughts on the relevance of your top star willing to put others over? Yeah, I mean, look, the other parameters that John gave in terms of a top star are evident by watching television and seeing what they do. I don't know how Roman Reigns and John Cena react when they're asked to put somebody over, so it's really hard for me to pick one over the other for that. I would assume that both are going to be professional. It all depends on what your relationship is like with them. I think John sort of alluded to this, but, you know, when you're a top star in a team sport, you generally have a relationship with the coach that maybe goes beyond, the head coach's relationship with the 53rd player on the roster on an NFL team, for example. So I would like to think that I might be closer to them in terms of getting their input on storylines, getting their input on ideas. So I would also like to think that maybe they'd be more willing to put people over if I asked them to because of that relationship, or if not, maybe we can have a reasonable discussion of why that is. So, yeah, I mean, but I can't say whether that's Roman or whether that's Cena. I can't give one or the other an advantage in terms of if we're talking about picking Reigns or Cena. I can't say one over the other on this particular topic. So back to John. He says, on to my main topic, the women's division on SmackDown. The Raw women's division, despite Rhea Ripley not defending the title much and despite the majority of her focus weekly being on Judgment Day, is far more compelling and laid out than SmackDown's. Both shows seem like they're being operated by two different companies, WWE and AEW or Impact, for instance, because of this huge disparity. Raw's women's division isn't perfect, mainly because without Rhea Ripley, it may well be just as disorganized and messy as SmackDown's. But I feel Rhea on her own holds the division down very well and is a fantastic pillar for the rest of the division, that her feuds feel extra important and everyone else needs to defeat her. SmackDown women's division feels very scattershot and messy and like they don't have much of a plan. I have suggestions to fix that. The Io Sky damage control storyline has been start and stop with so many different directions it's been pulled. Charlotte has been Charlotte. Bianca has been on hiatus. Asuka has been babyface, then heel, then apparently babyface again. And I don't know if I should be rooting for her or thinking she's a cheater blowing mist in her opponent's face in order to win. I guess she's a tweener who's extremely talented and does what she has to in order to win. Most of the other women are around some weeks but then disappear before reappearing later without an explanation for where they've been. Contrast that to Rhea Ripley on Raw, who returned after a few weeks away to handle Judgment Day business and resume her role as their leader. We know which women's wrestlers on Raw are gone for a while because of injury, Raquel and Rhea, for instance, or for other reasons, Piper Niven, because the women's tag championships are cursed. It just feels more organized on Raw. SmackDown is 2 hours only, but I feel like that's not necessarily an excuse. I have some suggestions to improve the current women's division on SmackDown. Number one, always have a secondary women's feud not revolving around a championship, and ideally a third women's feud, running concurrently and designate time every week to further the story. Number two, give women more multi-layered personalities and put them in a bigger variety of situations than just reacting to a single feud, i.e. Rhea Ripley interacting with Becky Lynch, Drew McIntyre, Nia Jax, Raquel Rodriguez, Adam Pearce in the same show, which relates to current and future feuds slash partnerships. Number three, use star power more effectively to put others over, i.e. instead of having the likes of Charlotte, Asuka, and Bianca feuding over a championship, use them separately and with younger women on SmackDown telling more stories instead of cramming them into just the one story. Number four, or give more promo time and increase variety of promos to the women instead of just putting them in matches. For example, Charlotte hasn't really spoken on the mic in an extended promo for a while now, and Io and Asuka aren't getting the same treatment as Shinsuke and Nakamura on Raw, with captions on the screen, allowing them to speak Japanese without confusing the non-Japanese speaking audience. And number five, make whoever the SmackDown Women's Champion is seem like the top stars on SmackDown, like how Rhea is in the mix for a top star on Raw at the moment and is so badass. Question, what are your thoughts on my suggestions, and what suggestions would you make to improve the SmackDown Women's Division? Kelly, I think some of those suggestions have merit. I think the mistake seems to be having Bianca, Charlotte, and Asuka all interacting with each other every time they're on TV. And I think it is necessary for them to kind of have a break. I look back at, you know, Charlotte Flair's feud with Toni Storm that didn't really go anywhere because Toni Storm walked out. But that was an attempt at taking someone and getting them over by interacting with Charlotte, whereas now it seems like Charlotte's only interacting with the other top stars, and that doesn't give a lot of time for others to get built up. So, you know, that's kind of where I am with that. Do you agree with John that there is a major discrepancy between the women's division on both brands, and what do you think of his ideas to sort of fix that?
I agree with him about how SmackDown feels a little more scattershot, a little more like there's a story, but they're diverging from it a lot if they like something they see in any given week or if they just want to go a slightly different way. It feels more planned on Raw. For a long time, that was not something we said about any of the divisions, but it just definitely seems like kind of what we're seeing right now. I also am with him on some of these suggestions to fix with the biggest one, and gosh, I couldn't even tell you how many times I've talked about this on podcasts, but if the only storyline the women are getting is about the championship, then you cannot have a strong division. You've got to have somebody waiting to be in that spot. Yeah, yeah, and it's the same problem that WWE had for many years, even with the benefit of two shows, only having that feud going on top. Then of course, you know, Trish Stratus beats Mickey James or whoever was the last opponent. All of a sudden they're like, okay, Jazz needs to be the next opponent, but we haven't had Jazz on TV for 6 weeks because we've only been doing stuff with these two. It's not that world anymore, but it seems like they're running into the same issues with the championship being the focal point. And I don't know. Multi-person matches for me should be rare. They should be rare enough to feel special. And I hate how often wrestling goes to that well now. There are different ways for these women to get over. And a lot of them could get over more doing, like take somebody like Tegan Knox. She needs another match, like another good match, like a hole in the head. We need to know who she is. Like the fact that she changed her hair color did not give her a character. She just looks different, and we don't know her a whole lot more. I want to see more, even if there's only one other major storyline, then you've got somebody waiting for the next time you need a challenger. And NXT and this is the kicker of it, NXT has been so good at this for a few years now that it makes no sense that they're not translating that success to SmackDown and having multiple major storylines, women in feuds that don't center around the championship. And you really, you only, it's great if you've got a few more, but you really only need one, because you only need one next major challenger. And the winner is that next major challenger. It sounds too stupid to be that easy, but it is that easy. I totally agree with him about that. There was another point that he made that I felt really strongly about in agreement with him. Can't remember it now, but I don't think the sky is falling and that the disparity is as strong as he does, I don't think. But yeah, it could be strengthened, and the ways it could be strengthened are, they're fairly elementary.
The next topic for John, Dominic Mysterio and the crowd reactions he receives, his performance as a heel, and do you think some of the noise is piped in? The kind of monstrous crowd reactions Dominic Mysterio receives seem like some of the most passionate in wrestling history. Sometimes I wonder if his crowd reactions are perhaps even louder than that of the crowd's reaction after the body slam Andre the Giant took at WrestleMania 3 in the Pontiac Silverdome, or Austin's first stunner on Vince, or Austin driving the beer truck and dousing Rock and Vince in beer in 1999. I'm not the kind of person to question people's honesty and integrity, especially if they seem like an honest person, but Triple H on saying on SmackDown he didn't think these reactions toward Dominic were real until he was standing in the ring, I'm still skeptical, to be honest. I also want to clarify that I'm not questioning Dominic's abilities as a performer or his ability to keep going in promos and talk over the fans, as aside from still being a little green in the ring, his mic work, facial reactions, body language, and acting as a whole are very good, and he's at least competent in the ring against the right opponent. It's just that there are other people on the roster who are far more advanced in many of these categories who don't get anywhere near the strong reactions from the crowd. I mean, on Raw, he stood alongside one of the best current heels in Logan Paul, and Paul's heel reaction was a pittance compared to Dominic's. Paul is absolutely incredible as a heel and a natural at it, but for some reason Dominic is getting like 3 or 4 times the reaction in magnitude Paul was. Grayson Waller doesn't get anywhere near as strong a heel reaction, even though he's incredibly smug and takes cheap shots at babyfaces and the crowd. Nor does Austin Theory or even Shinsuke Nakamura, who is trying to cripple Seth Rollins' back and ruin his life so he can't take care of and play with his children in the future. Yet it seems the fans save most of their energy to boo Dominic instead of Shinsuke. I want to emphasize Shinsuke wanted to put Seth Rollins in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, and Dominic Mysterio has been getting louder and more aggressive boos by far. Question, how would you compare Dominic's performance so far as a heel compared to the other big heels in WWE and even wrestling as a whole, both past and present? Look, Dominic's a good heel. The whole character about, you know, the prison doms, to sort of steal from Prison Mike of The Office, was clever, and he's kind of just riding that wave at this point. And I think his relationship with his dom, Rhea Ripley, also plays into that as well, where he kind of hides behind her and does the chicken heel thing. But I think at least 50% of the crowd reaction he gets now is because it's just the cool thing to do. You know, the cool thing is to go to your show and try to boo Dominic Mysterio as loud as you can. So, you know, I think he's really good as a heel, but I think that's a big part of it now as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you didn't, that I think that a large part of that reaction is everyone wanting to be the loudest one booing Dominic. And it's just what you do, and it's fun. And he's just a jerk, and he has it coming. I do think he's truly one of the great heels in the business right now, just for a lot of different reasons, some of which are his work and some of which are just the perfection of him being the son of an extremely respected near babyface near lifer. Like, his dad is so well loved, so respected, still wrestling at a high level, and is just so respected for the ways in which he helped change the business. And the character of Dominic rejects all that. Like, he doesn't, like, he just treats him like, oh, it's my dad, he's uncool, he sucks, and you guys are all wrong. I mean, so much of that is just inborn for him. As far as the piped-in thing, I don't know if this is, like, the wrong thing to say, but my thought on piped-in sound is I don't care. If the piped-in sound leads to somebody getting those reactions, I'm actually not against it. If it sounds exactly the same and you're piping in the same, like, here's a throwback. You can't do that on television, had a laugh track, but they only had like three different laughs. So you heard the same three different tracks over and over. So it was clear it was a laugh track. Don't do that. But as far as piped in sound, it doesn't bother me if the ends justify the means.
Yeah. John wants to look at the crowd reaction from two different angles. He says, number one, the motives of the crowds booing him, and number two, is his talent level worthy of this much crowd investment, or does talent level have anything to do with it? Firstly, why are the crowds booing him so passionately? Is it just for fun to try to mess with him and ruin the cadence of his promos, especially since the character is so arrogant and hides behind others, or is it legitimate go-away heat because they really dislike him and or are bitter because of the perception that he cut ahead in line? I find it hard to believe the fans would boo him this loudly just because it's fun, because this kind of reaction seems so loud that if it were just for fun, I think the crowd would get bored after a while and move on to something or someone else that's fun. It has been over a year, I believe. I'll start by comparing the reactions to two wrestlers in recent times who got similarly passionate reactions, but on different ends of the scale, babyface Roman Reigns and 2013-2014 Daniel Bryan. I'm probably not breaking any news when I say the reactions Roman received, especially after he won the Royal Rumble in 2015, were built on resentment and frustration from fans pretty much every week, thinking Roman was shoved down their throats as the top babyface and essentially handed his spot as top guy without having to put anywhere near as much work in as guys like Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Cesaro, and even John Cena, who has been praised by so many colleagues for his incredible hard work and dedication to the business. It was more protest against the company, but also directed at Roman because he was the guy picked. Now let's look at Daniel Bryan. During 2013 and 2014, he was receiving some of the biggest babyface reactions ever, and it created a surge of momentum that led to him winning the championship in the main event at WrestleMania 30. I was watching at the time, and his reactions in each arena seemed akin to a mini earthquake. The fans were so loud and passionate. There was this one night on Raw in a segment building up to John Cena versus Randy Orton, and they invited all previous world champions who were contracted to the company at the time to be present in the ring. This included popular babyfaces and heels, and Daniel Bryan, standing in the background, was getting earth-shattering reactions, even though it wasn't building to a Daniel Bryan match, but Cena versus Orton to unify the title at the time. Daniel Bryan was and is a phenomenal wrestler, but I feel his popularity was down to more than that. The reason why I question whether some of the reaction to Dominic is piped in is because I'm quite skeptical that a guy who has only been in the business for around 3 years, hasn't been forced down fans' throats, not to a huge extent anyway, he isn't main eventing WrestleMania, and is in a faction with other incredible heels who have done dastardly things, even though Rhea gets positive reactions weekly unless she's with Dominic, is getting 100% authentic, almost deafening boos. He is definitely talented, and I want to give him credit, but some other people on the roster are also just as talented as heels, if not more so, and well-rounded as overall performers, and they get a relatively small fraction of the crowd reactions. However, I also think, as I've said many times before, you should go with the crowd reactions, and if the crowd reactions are 100% genuine, maybe Dominic in a few years could be in consideration to be a world champion. I think if the crowds are this passionate about someone, you should go all in, because this kind of crowd response to someone comes by every once in a while, and it's the same kind of thing with LA Knight. The only three main reasons why fans are booing him way more than any other heel I can think of are as follows. Number one, fans dislike that he essentially got to skip a few rungs of the ladder and making it as a wrestler because he's Rey Mysterio's son. Number two, he was disrespectful to his father in storyline, and fans are playing along because they love Rey so much. And number three, relating to point number one, he's a heel and essentially a kid who fans badly want to get his comeuppance because most fans are unanimous in feeling he hasn't fully earned his push, whereas even the other three in the Judgment Day had to pay their dues before coming to WWE's main roster. Plus, Dominic has been presented as a punk kid who hides behind others and brags about every small or large victory with a certain smugness. Question, if you had to boil it down to three reasons why you think Dominic's heel crowd reactions are so incredibly strong, what would they be? Also, do you think some of the noise is maybe piped in, or is it 100% organic? I think Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful had a tough time on Twitter this week fending off people who were questioning him when he said that some of the boos were piped in. So I believe that some are piped in to maybe to make it seem louder, even though he is probably still getting loud crowd reactions in the arena. I think the main two reasons, as we said earlier, that he's getting these reactions are, number one, because it's the cool thing to do. I know John doesn't necessarily believe that, but I do think that's part of it. And number two is, you know, to answer the question of why is he getting a bigger reaction than the Grayson Wallers and Austin Theories of the world, it's because Dominic is a much more interesting character. You know, and we talked about, like, the whole prison stuff, the hiding behind mommy, the being the dastardly heel, the promos that he cuts against Ray and his treatment of mass wrestlers, despite that being his lineage, all of those character traits and the storylines that he's been involved in are much more interesting than anything Grayson Waller and Austin Theory have done, as talented as they are. And certainly his character is a lot more well-rounded, and his storylines have been better than the storylines and character development that Austin Theory and Grayson Waller have gotten. So fans feel more connected to that. I think that's a big part of it. Kelly, what say you?
Yeah, and another thing that that Waller and Theory don't have is the father that they're supposed to look up to that was in wrestling. And again, he's got that, call it unfair if you will, but that's built in. He's got somebody who he's supposed to model himself after, and he doesn't. And it's funny because they kind of had him try, but it didn't work because he's not the right size. He's not the right dude to play Rey Mysterio Jr. I said Jr. before I realized I'd have to add another one there. The only other thing I would add to that is that he's a coward. People don't want to cheer for cowards. They really, really can't stand cowards. This used to be very, very commonplace in wrestling. Like the cool heel, it's great that it exists, but in WCW, wrestlers started having a little bit too much control over what they got to be. And people wanted to be bad guys, but they wanted to be cool bad guys. And I don't think it did the business any favors. Dominic is a throwback, and, you know, maybe no surprise because his family's been in the business for many, many years. So he's approaching the business kind of in an old school way where he is the heel who he's underhanded, and not just underhanded, but he's shown to be a lesser wrestler. He's shown to be unworthy of winning the championships that he wins. Like he doesn't deserve all these things based on merit, but he's getting them and he's taking them because he's aligned with the right guys and he sneaks in. And just the fact that he sneaks in, slaps somebody and then immediately runs away. Why don't more people do this? I love what he's doing. I think that if anything, he is underrated. And I maybe those things are piped in. Again, I don't care. But I think that it makes sense for him to be getting these great reactions because he is such a coward. And I missed the wrestling coward so much. I didn't even know how much I missed the wrestling coward until he showed up and started doing that better than anybody has in a very long time.
And one last quick thing from John. He said, what would you do with LA Knight at WrestleMania? As is the case every year, I will not watch the Saudi show, regardless of how great the card is. I just don't feel right, and these events shouldn't be happening. But I believe when this current contract with Saudi ends, either WWE will end this relationship or Saudi's government will change their policies, be more open-minded, improve equality, and modernize like the rest of the world. In relation to this, I just not do the LA Knight Roman match at this point to begin with, mainly because it's in Saudi Arabia, and I feel if they held off a while, Knight, if he's still as insanely popular as he is now, could still win at a later time. But also the downside of doing a title change anytime soon is that you would likely be sacrificing Cody Rhodes finishing his story against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, or Jey Uso pinning Reigns just to put the title on LA Knight, who is just exploded in popularity in recent months. It may seem crazy, anyone suggesting LA Knight should be defeating your champion of 3+ years in Roman Reigns just because the fans adore him, but I have said before how I feel you should go with the flow of the fans and what they want, within reason, of course, and this is one of those times where I at least would consider a title change if it wasn't a Saudi event, again, if you're doing the match, which you probably shouldn't. However, I doubt Roman would have returned this month if it wasn't the Saudi event taking place, so the next best opportunity for a potential Knight title win would be the Royal Rumble, but then who does Knight face at WrestleMania? Honestly, in order to not disrupt all the plans they made over the last couple of years, they might as well wait for his big title win until SummerSlam, whether against Jay, Cody, or Roman. You could also have Knight go on to Raw and challenge Gunther at WrestleMania if he is still champion and end his reign, or perhaps he faces Jimmy Uso or Solo Sikoa at WrestleMania before facing Roman Reigns in a title versus title match at SummerSlam. Question, if it is Cody, Jay, Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania, who would you have LA Knight face, assuming he's still as insanely popular as he is now? Keep up the great work. Thank you, John. Yeah, that's a pretty big assumption to assume he's still going to be as hot. I think your best case scenario is Gunther. And I'm not even sure Gunther's still going to be IC champion then, but I think that would be a really good consolation prize for the LA Knight fans if he doesn't defeat Roman Reigns for the Universal title, is to beat someone the caliber of Gunther. You know, the simple answer is WrestleMania is a long way away, and it's so hard, even assuming LA Knight is as popular then as he is now, it's still such a long way away to predict. But I do think, you know, if he is hot, and he's not in a main title match that is against Roman Reigns or against whoever the world champion is, then you could do a lot worse than Gunther.
Yeah, that's actually who I was going to say. Once he brought that up, I almost just jumped in and said, that's it. That's that person. If LA Knight is still that hot in 5.5 months, and oh my, that seems like a long time. That's where you really wish, I wish we still had Undertaker for one more. But they soaked that one for everything that was worth. They got one more and one more and one more, a few that they probably should not have necessarily done because he was not ring ready anymore. And that's not a criticism. I get why they did it, But, yeah, that's where you wish you had somebody like that. And maybe you have somebody kind of on, not on that tier, but maybe a legacy guy like Orton. Like, I don't know when he can come back. But you give him that person who is a multi-time champion and have him work with him. I would say Batista. Batista didn't have way more money to make not taking bumps in wrestling. Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see the Roman World Championship for LA Knight. I'm going to say ever. I just don't think that's his title to win, his story to finish. I don't think it's Cody's either, so I don't want people to think I'm saying Cody Rhodes. I've never thought that he was the guy to win that championship either. But he's got more of a chance than LA Knight does. Maybe it's obvious I'm sputtering because I don't know who to put LA Knight against. but I will say Gunther if he still has that championship. I do think a secondary championship is probably, in the very short term, the best we can hope for LA Knight.
Yeah, and there's no shame in that. I mean, people keep throwing out these fantasies about LA Knight winning the championship over Roman Reigns and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I think, you know, for a guy like this, from where he's come from, there's no shame in not getting that title at some point. I think it's great that he's even getting a shot. You know, it's far different. I don't think anyone would have expected him to be in this spot if you'd asked them in January, you know, about the trajectory of LA Knight's career. So, there's no shame in not winning it. Not everybody should win it just because they're the hot hand. That's my take anyway, especially when you've got the circumstances surrounding the Roman Reigns situation and the storyline that's been building for so long. I don't think you take a U-turn just to give it to the hot hand here. So, Kelly, absolute pleasure talking to you once again here on Wrestling Night in America. As always, before we let you go, go ahead and tell people where they can find you on social media and what you do for the Torch each week.
I cover NXT pretty exhaustively, both present and 8 years back. We're talking about the Finn Balor era. Samoa Joe's really getting going on NXT 8 years back. It's a really fun show, a lot of laughs with Tom Stoup if you're VIP, and we always talk about movies for about half the show, answer a movie question and talk a lot of movies as well. And, of course, I do PWT Talks NXT in addition to doing the NXT recap roughly every other show with a lot of audibles being called because Bruce and I both have lives. And you can find me on social media.
I didn't think that was allowed, Kelly.
We've tried to make it work. It's not ideal because we're both aging and our lives are pretty, like, quiet at this point. But uh-huh. I'm aging more than he is. But we try to do stuff now and then.
Okay.
On social media at Spooky Milk. I love doing this show. So thanks for having me again.
Of course. And we'll have you on again soon. Kelly Wells, always a pleasure.
Cheers, man.
And pleasure talking to each and every one of you out there. Don't forget to email and call us in. And next Saturday we'll be on after Crown Jewel goes off the air. Brandon LeClaire and I will be running through that show, taking your phone calls and emails. So join us then, pwtorchdailycast.com. Next Saturday, you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Join us again next weekend for Wrestling Night in America.